Okay. Pat. Yes. Last year we had the opportunity to discuss kashering, so we're not going to do that this year. The halachas of getting ready for Pesach, that's on the website if one wants to review or hear for the first time, cbey.org. Tonight, though, we're going to discuss some inyani machshava, some hashkafa regarding the Yontif of Pesach, Habalin Latova. Tonight is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so we have the schus to start the month off right away. We just said Yalav Yavo and Ma'ariv. And this is the best way to start preparing for Pesach, besides the physical preparations that we obviously spend quantitatively a lot of time on. But it's also important for us to remember that we have to feel the Pesach experience in many ways, spiritually as well. So as we discuss tonight, some ideas that both are meant to inspire us and also usable, hopefully, to say any of these points at the Seder, feel free to do that. We're okay? Okay. The centerpiece of the night, as we know, is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah to retell the story of Mitzrayim and the end of Magid, which is the ultimate, the goal that we try to get to throughout the night, as you see in source number one, B'chol dar v'dar chayev adam leros as atmo ki'ilu yatsami Mitzrayim. Throughout the Magid, the hours that we spend retelling the story, the goal is supposed to be that we are supposed to feel by the end as if we ourselves went out of Mitzrayim this year. That is the ultimate end, the goal. And that's what the Abu Draham, one of the Rishonim, in source number 2 says, where it's underlined, Klomar, Sheyireh v'yabit ba'atzmo. I have to look at myself. Ki'ilu hu haya eved, as if I was a servant. The Yatzal Lecheiras Mitzrayim. There's more if anybody needs Makoros. There's more sheets right up there in the first row. Ki'ilu hu yad Yatzal Lecheiras Mitzrayim. As if I left and I was an Eved, a slave, and I went to achieve freedom from Mitzrayim. The Brisker Rav is quoted to have commented that this is one of the hardest, if not the hardest, mitzvah of the year. When we have a mitzvah to do something, not to do something, okay, we could do that. We could put on tefillin, we could light Shabbos candles, we could eat kosher. Well, we could do things. We could do things. We could not do things. We could do mitzvahs. We could not do averos. But to achieve a feeling of that we left Mitzrayim, that's very, very difficult and very challenging. So how are we supposed to prepare ourselves so that in 2 weeks from now we'll be able to fulfill this mitzvah properly, at least the best that we could, that we can, magically transform ourselves, thinking that Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves, Mitchilo de Avodah Zarah Hayavaseinu, we start with the Gnus, with the low, and we end with the high. So how exactly are we supposed to prepare ourselves? Chazal tell us that we do many things at the Seder. The Torah tells us some things to do at the Seder, and the Rabbanan added on a few more. There are 4 mitzvos that we do at the Seder. Let's try to get through everything that we do. There are 4 mitzvos and everything else. There have been hagim and remembrances. 4 mitzvos. 2 daraisas, 2 biblical, and 2 darabanans, 2 rabbinic. The 2 daraisas are Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, retelling the story, and matzah, eating matzah. Those are the 2 daraisas. The 2 darabanans are dalet kosos, drinking the 4 cups of wine, and the mitzvah of maror, which is midrabanan bezman hazeh. It's only daraisa when we have the carbon pesach. But if we don't have the carbon pesach, it's only darabanan. So we have the 4 mitzvahs: Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim and matzah, maror, and dalet kosos. There's a lot of other things we do at the Seder as well. We do karpas and charoses, and we lean heseba, and we dip a few times. A lot of things we do at the Seder. But many of those are minhagim, are customs. We should all do them. We should follow the customs. But we have to realize that there are 4 ikar mitzvos of the night. Many, many achronim tell us, though, that even though there are many seemingly disparate actions that we do, 4 mitzvos, other remembrances, karpas, charoses, everything we do during the night really is part of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everything, though they are separate mitzvos, separate minhagim, they all make up the entire frame, the centerpiece of the night, and that is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is said in source number 3 by one of the great Gedolim a number of years ago, Rav Zhalti. Rav Zhalti writes, based on a Ramah, Achei Nira, line 6, the Afal Pisha Shtias Dalet Kosos, even though the 4 Kosos, V'achilas Maror, Bizman Hazeh, and eating the maror today, hey, mitzvos midrabanan, they might be rabbinic in nature. Why do we have to eat maror? Because it's only drabanan. That's only in terms of the level of obligation that might be drabanan. But when we fulfill them, when we put on our kittel, when we walk around the table with the matzah on our backs, and we say halach ma'anya, when we do anything we do that night, it is a kiyum, it is a fulfillment of reliving the teil, reliving going out of Mitzrayim. Again, something we have other times in halacha when there's a difference between the level of obligation and the fact that you're once fulfilling a mitzvah. You know, a woman does not have to shake a lulav. So mitzvah is a time-bound mitzvah. A woman does not have to shake a lulav. She's pater totally. She's not even chayiv midrabanan. She's totally pater. When she shakes a lulav, she gets a mitzvah. She gets a mitzvah daraisa. She's mekayim. She fulfills it. And as Ashkenazim, she can even say a bracha on it. We paskin. Rama says a woman can say a bracha on a mitzvah aseishas van grama, even though she didn't have to do it. But still, once something is done, it becomes part of a mitzvah, and it's a fulfillment of a mitzvah. So says Rav Zsolti in source number 3, everything we do on the Seder night, whether it's the 4 mitzvos, matzah and maror and dalakosos and discussing, CBTS Mitzrayim, or anything else that we have throughout the Seder, it all is a fulfillment and puts us into the shoes of our ancestors. So maybe if we analyze some of those mitzvos, the 4 aforementioned mitzvos, and we appreciate what we're supposed to be thinking about when we do those mitzvos, what they symbolize, what they represent, we will be better equipped that by the end of the Seder, we'll be able to have that feeling of Ki'ilu Hu Yatsumi Mitzrayim. So what we're going to do now is going to analyze each 4 of the mitzvos halayla, and hopefully throughout these ideas that we talk about, we'll be inspired to achieve that feeling at the end of the Seder. Okay, let's first discuss matzah. The mitzvah of matzah. What are we supposed to think about when we eat matzah? Are we supposed to be happy? Supposed to be sad? What does matzah symbolize? So what should be going through our minds? So on the surface, if you look in the Torah, or first look in the Mishnah, and then we'll look in the Torah, source number 4, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Pesachim, a Mishnah that we quote in the Haggadah, matzah al shum, why do we eat matzah? Al shum shenigalu aboseinu mimitzrayim, to remember that our fathers were redeemed from Egypt. Shenemar vayofu asabateka shirotim mimitzrayim. They baked the dough that they took out of Mitzrayim. Matzah reminds us that we left very quickly. We left another second. Hashem said, get out of here, leave. Matzah, wow, Hashem took us out in an unbelievable overnight. We were avodim, and then we took us out. Matzah symbolized the haste. Matzah connects to the geula. Even the psukim themselves in the Torah seem to tell us this. Source number 5, the psukim in Parshas Re'eh. Lo sochal alav chametz. Don't eat chametz when you have the carbon pasach. Shivas yamim tochal alav matzos lechem oni. For 7 days you have to eat matzah. So why? Key, because. Usually key means because. Because, why do you have to eat matzah? B'chipazon yatzasa me'eretz Mitzrayim. Because you left Mitzrayim in haste. L'man tizkar yom seitzlam me'eretz Mitzrayim. So that you remember the day that you left Mitzrayim, kol yamei chayecha, all the days of your life. So if we look in the Mishnah, we look in the Pasuk, it seems like matzah we're supposed to be happy about. We're supposed to be thinking about the geula, thinking about the redemption. And we know, as well, that matzah, we lean. Leaning usually gives it away. If we do haseba, if we lean, when we eat something, that usually gives it away. That symbolizes the geula. We don't lean by maror. We don't lean by karpas, but we lean by matzah. We lean by korech, the sandwich, which is might be the mitzvah matzah. We lean by the afikomen. We lean by the dalakosos. So says the, even that halacha at haseba might tip us off that this is part of the mitzvah. That's what the Rambam writes in source number 6. Laficha kishasoid adam balayla, when a person leans to the left, sarek lech ovelishos vumesav derecherus, we lean to the left to symbolize our freedom. So this is matzah. Matzah has a seba. So matzah is a seba. Matzah, remember the geula, and even one more, the Gemara in Pesachim tells us in source number 7, kiddush Shmuel, the Amar Shmuel, lechem oni. What does lechem oni mean? What is oni? Lechem sha'onin alav dvarim harbei. A lechem that we say on it many things. Onin alav, for the word aniyah. We say on it many things. Meaning we say the whole Haggadah when the matzah is on the table. And Rashi even adds in source 8 on that Gemara, sha'onin alav dvarim, shegomrin alav es ha'halel. We talk about the redemption. We say Hallel when the matzah is open. It's always sometimes in that God, they cover the matzahs, open the matzahs, cover. You have to always remember. It's simple. The matzahs are always open unless you're holding the kos. It's not rocket science. Right? So you pick up the kos by Hishamda, you cover the matzah. Pick up the kos by the fichach, you cover the matzah. The rest of Magid, the matzahs are open because that's the point. The point is to say the Haggadah in the context of seeing the matzah. Lechem this Gemara. Lechem she'onin lov dvarim harbe. So that, and that Rashi says that includes Haggadah and Hallel. All of these sources point in the direction that matzah is something unique in terms of it's reminding us of the geula, reminding us that we left quickly. This is matzah. Wonderful. And yet, there are just as many sources on the other side. We don't have to look so far in the Haggadah. One of the first paragraphs we say, the first paragraph we say after Kiddush, the bottom, source number 9, Halach ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread. This is the bread that our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim, not when they went out of Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim. So, Halach Ma'anya seems to give us a different picture of what the matzah is about. And it's not just why they eat it in Mitzrayim. Why did they eat matzah in Mitzrayim? So there's an amazing story of the Rishonim. The Abu Draham, we quoted him before in source number 10, quotes, what does this mean that we say in Halach Ma'anya? Mahu, what does that mean that they ate in Mitzrayim? I thought they only ate it on the way out of Mitzrayim. They didn't have time for it, for the bread, for the dough to rise. Says the Abu Draham, no, it's deeper than that. They ate it in Mitzrayim. Why in Mitzrayim? So he quotes the Eben Ezra. This is unclear whether this story happened to the Eben Ezra, or the Eben Ezra just retold the story. The Eben Ezra, one of the great Rishonim. The Eben Ezra writes that when he or someone in his time was taken captive, they fed that captive matzah. But they fed him matzah when he was taken captive. Pirish of Yosef HaAzuvi, second line, Sheyashavui Bahodu, he was taken captive in Turkey. Bahayumachilin Oso Lechem Matzah, they fed him matzah. Velo Nasnu Lo La'olam Chametz, they never gave him any chametz. They only gave him matzah. This is 1,000 years ago. It's not thousands of years ago. So why'd they give him matzah for? Vahatam Mipnei, why? Shehu Kashe. We all know matzah stays in your system for a long time. Right? Matzah stays there, and therefore the captors would have wanted to give a type of food to the captives. They wouldn't have to feed them so often. They would be able to be satiated quickly and be able to work for a long time without having to take lunch breaks. They dafka fed them matzah because that's a captive's food. It also takes a short time to prepare. And much shorter, they don't have to wait for the dough to rise. So matzah is the food of captives, of shvuyim. This is halach ma'anya. This isn't matzah of geula, like we just had the first idea in matzah. Matzah seems to be just the opposite. This is the bread of captives. This is the bread that they served, that we ate in Mitzrayim, because in Mitzrayim we were avadim. And furthermore, it doesn't stop there, one more gemara. Probably the more famous interpretation of lechem oni. What does lechem oni mean? The poor man's bread. So we had one shot, lechem she'onin alav dvarim harbe. But in source number 11, the Gemara has another interpretation of what is lechem oni. Third line, davar acher, lechem oni, ani ksiv. If you look in the Torah, the word oni is spelled without a vav. So you could read it ani, ayin nun yud, poor man's bread. Not oni from the word answering. But ani, ma ani shadarko beprusa, apkan beprusa. And we even symbolize that the matzah is the poor man's bread, we break the matzah. We break the matzah in half because aniim, poor people, don't have whole matzahs, they don't have whole loaves. They have pieces, morsels, whatever they can get their hands on. So that's why we do yachatz. We break the matzah to symbolize that this is the poor man's bread. This is lechem oni. That's what matzah is. It symbolizes the shibud, it symbolizes the avdus. So if we take a step back, we have a problem, which we have to answer. What are we supposed to think about when we eat the matzah? Are we supposed to be thinking about the geula, they went out quickly, and that's what the Torah seems to say, and we do haseba when we eat matzah, and it's wonderful, and it's the geula? Or we're supposed to be thinking about halach ma'anyo diachalo avasana, we have to bend down, and we were troubled, and this is the matzah we ate when we were captives, and this is the lechem ani, and we break the matzah. What are we supposed to be thinking about by the matzah? So the Ramban suggests, in source number 12, that the matzah is multi-themed. The matzah has both opposite themes. The more we think about what was, the more we think about how low we were, the more we could appreciate where God took us. And the more we could appreciate the lift that we got. We can't appreciate how high we got unless we realize how low we were. And just the opposite. We can't appreciate how low we were unless we see how far we got, and then we can look back. Says the Ramban, there's no problem that the matzah symbolizes opposite situations and opposite feelings. Ubir bekan dvarim rabim, writes the Ramban in Source 12. Ki hisker b'matzah shetia lechem oni, the matzah is lechem oni lahagid ki tziva liskar shehoza b'chipazon. To remind us that we went out quickly. V'hi oni zecher, and also, ki hayi b'mitzrayim b'lechem tsar umayim lachatz. To remind us of what we used to eat in Mitzrayim. V'hine tirmoz l'shnei dvarim. Says the Ramban, it's not a problem when we eat the matzah. And again, we're supposed to think about this when we eat the matzah. Again, we all have to eat the matzah. We know that, just think about one Dvar Halacha thrown in here, but again, it has to do with the matzah. So we eat the matzah. We say, Alachilas matzah namotzi lechem. We eat the matzah, and then we'll eat the marah, and then we'll eat the korech. We eat the korech because the korech might be the ikar matzah. We might think we have to eat the matzah and marah together. So we don't want to take our chances, so we do everything. We eat plain matzah, we eat plain marah, then we eat matzah and marah together. But that matzah in the sandwich might be the ikar mitzvah matzah. So one is not supposed to be mafsik. One is not supposed to really talk about anything else from the time you say al achilas matzah through korech. You can talk before the egg. It's okay. But through korech, because that might be the ikar mitzvah. But for, you know, we're not supposed to be doing other things, even though the meal's coming very soon, and we don't want things to burn. It's a crucial time there. But still, we have to make sure women are obligated just as much as men in achilas matzah. So we got to make sure we don't have any hefsek between the bracha of achilas matzah and marar and korech. So it's a good time. We're going to be sitting there. It's going to be quiet at the seder. Somewhat quiet. Everybody's munching and crunchy. Haven't eaten anything all day, right? So we're eating the matzah over here. We had a cup of wine a while ago, but we're eating the matzah. So as we're crunching, we can sit and think a little bit. Think about these messages. Think about what matzah means. Matzah, we remember that we used to eat this when we were slaves, but we also ate this on the way out. We remember the shibud, and we remember the geula. Matzah has both themes. That's matzah. Number two, let's talk about maror. Maror, on the surface, seems to be one-dimensional. Maror. Maror is bitter. Maror is... My daughter came home this week and told me, maror is iwi. Matzah is great. So that's a maror is bitter, right? You don't do a haseba by maror. Maror, obviously, the shibud. Something to talk about. But maybe there's even a deeper appreciation that we could have of the maror. Maybe maror as well has another hidden theme that is not readily apparent until we study some of the sources. Says the Abarbanel, source number 13, one of the great late Rishonim, early Achronim, however you want to call him. End of the 1400s. Says the Abarbanel, "V'sheyoser ra'oi sheniyachaseihu l'shiftei b'nei Yaakov, ki hine ha'Torah he'ida." The Torah testifies, "Shehem chatu chata'a gedola, b'sinas chinem es Yosef achihem." The Torah records and testifies that the brothers of Yosef committed a terrible crime by hating him, and of course by selling him down to Mitzrayim. Mechiras Yosef. And specifically when Yosef was coming to see how they were doing, Dabar l'shalom, seeing going in peace, he comes to Dothan, he comes to Shechem, and they turn on him, and they throw him in the pit, and of course they eventually sell him. Line 6, Vimhe Yosef Ruben lohaya b'mechira, and even though Ruben happened to not be there, Chazal tell us when they actually sold him, Rashi says it was his turn to take care of Yaakov, but hinehu b'sina, Reuben also was in the hatred. Reuben also said, you know, didn't protest when they were going to throw him into the pit. So Reuben also is part of it. Line 11. Ulafi shehem chatu. Because they sinned, says the Abarbanel, haya mishuras hadin sheyakablu onsham. They deserve to be punished. Ulafi shebimitzrayim chatu shemachrulios ebetsham. Because their sin was that they sold Yosef to be a slave in Mitzrayim, it's only fitting that they and their children become slaves in Mitzrayim. Mida keneged mida. Hayaroi sheyilku b'Mitzrayim b'yuavadim shama heim ubenayim v'zarim shanim rabos. Kabosha galas sham Yosef acheim ubanav v'zaro. Ulefishe shlichu as Yosef alabar, and because they threw Yosef into the pit, hayamei ansham. So it's fitting that their children have their children thrown into the pit of the Nile. Kala ben hayalod hayaorat yashlichuhu. This is all mida keneged mida. Line 18. Ulepisha al yedeyam yarad Yosef l'Mitzrayim hayaroi gamkin shal yado yarduhem l'galas Mitzrayim. And because through them Yosef went down to Mitzrayim, so they all went down to Mitzrayim. In a nutshell, the Abarbanel says that Shibud Mitzrayim was an onesh for Mechiras Yosef. Mechiras Yosef, the brothers sold Yosef. Because of that chait, they had to be in Mitzrayim. There's even a Zohar that says a gematria that connects to this. The Zohar writes, I gave it to you in source number 14, that we know that the brothers caused tsaras to Yaakov Avinu for 22 years. 22 years Yaakov didn't see his son Yosef. And we know that was because of Tkiyata Dishmaya that Yaakov left his parents for 22 years, and that's why he was punished not having his own son for 22 years. That's what the Gemara says. But the Zohar adds on, 22 years. That's how long that the brothers caused Yaakov tsar. How many brothers sold Yosef? How many brothers sold Yosef? Binyamin didn't. 10 brothers. 10 brothers, each 22 years, that's 220 years that they owed God. 220 years that they should have been punished. Says the Zohar, because the Shvatim were not zochet to be buried, to die in Eretz Yisrael, because they lived in Eretz Canaan all their lives, but they all died in Mitzrayim, and they were all brought back up, but because they were not zochet to die in Eretz Yisrael, so they each got a kapara of a year for that event, that they didn't die, so take off 1 year from each of the Shvatim, you're left with 210. 210 is the number of years that the Bnei Yisrael were actually in Mitzrayim, Redushana. 210 years. Again, 10 brothers, 22 years altogether. That's 220. Take off 10, take off 1 each from the fact that they were niftar in Mitzrayim. Says the Zohar, that's how you get 210. Again, Mechiras Yosef connected to the Zohar, connected to Shibud Mitzrayim. An even greater connection, and this I mentioned in past years, but it's too good to pass up, and I'll mention it again if you've never heard it. I heard this from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein. It's a rabbi who was a rabbi in England, an amazing Baal Darshan. Rabbi Isaac Bernstein asked, what's karpas? What's a karpas? What does the word mean? Karpas. A strange word. What does it mean? Question one. Question two. The Gemara says in Maseches Psachim, on Daf, Samach Hei Yom Ebeis. The Gemara describes the scene in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, we know, we went to the Beit HaMikdash, Meheri Yibana, right? We can get the Beit HaMikdash tomorrow. We'll all be in Yerushalayim for Pesach, for Ezra Hashem. If we forget all of our plans here, we'll all be in Yerushalayim. So we'll go there, we'll be in Yerushalayim, we'll all be setting the table for the Seder, and probably the wives and the kids will be setting up the Seder while the husband goes to the Beit HaMikdash, to Shech the Karban Pesach. He goes to Shech the Karban Pesach, and he's going to bring it back home in order to have for the main course, for the Seder. That's what's going to happen. So he goes to the Beit HaMikdash. On the way back, the Gemara describes how they carried the Karban Pesach back home. Gemara describes it. Says the Gemara, Samachayim Abezim Sachim, Tana. Ko echad ve'echad nosin pischo ba'oro. Everybody put their Pesach in its skin. We know whenever you eat a carbon, whenever you have any meat, you have to skin the animal first. So they put the carbon in its own skin. Umashilachorav. And they put it like a knapsack over their back and they carried it back. That's how they used to do it. That's what the Gemara says. Why is it so important for us to know this? How they carried it back or schlep it back? The Gemara has one more word. Amar Rav Ilish. Rav Ilish says, Tayos. Tayos. What does Tayos mean? Rashi says, what are Tayos? Travelers. Derech Socharim Yishme'elim. Who's that? You know why they carried it in this way? This is the way that the Yishme'elim merchants carry things. Derech Socharim Yishme'elim. Who's that? Socharim Yishme'elim makes us think about something. Where else do we have Socharim Yishme'elim? Parshas Vayeshev. The brothers of Yosef sold Yosef to Socharim Yishme'elim Midyanim. What's happening here? What are we thinking about Mechiras Yosef here for? Says Rabbi Isaac Bernstein. If you look in a Rashi, just give me the chumash over there. I'm sorry, the blue chumash. It's right on there. Says Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, the secret of these 3 points. What is 2 points? What is Karpas? And what is this Gemara that they used to carry the Karan Pesach back in a way that the Yishmaelim used to carry it back? It's a Rashi at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. The Pasuk tells us at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev that Yaakov made his son a ksones pasim, a coat of many colors. What does pasim mean? What does the word pasim mean? Rashi quotes that pasim means lashon klei milas, a royal garment. A royal garment, that's what pasim means. Kimo, what's another, where else, in Tanakh do you see royal garment? Karpas uscheles. A pasuk at the beginning of the Megillah. Chor karpas uscheles. Karpas. Karpas, the first back of the Megillah. We don't realize it. What's karpas doing there? Karpas means a beautiful garment. That's what karpas means. That's what it's doing in the Megillah. That's the ksonis pasim. So what do we do by karpas? We take the karpas and we dip it. We dip the karpas. What happened by Yosef? His brothers dipped his karpas, his ksones pasim, into the blood. At the beginning of the Seder, we acknowledge that Mechiras Yosef caused all of our problems. The sinas chinam that the brothers had, which we haven't fixed yet, or else we'd have the Beis HaMikdash. At the beginning of the Seder, we take the karpas and we act like the Sofer Mishmaelim on Pesach, like the Gemara says. We act like them in order to remind ourselves of Mechiras Yosef. Like the Abarbanel says, like the Zohar says. Mechiras Yosef is connected to the Shibud. What exactly is the connection? What is, and now we're getting to the punchline, what is the Midah Kenegan Midah of Mechiras Yosef? What did they do wrong that was fixed, that the tikkun happened in Mitzrayim? How was it that we fixed the problem? How was it that they fixed the problem there? So maybe one could suggest the following idea. The brothers had many tsaros in their life. Right? They had the tsaros of Yosef making fun of them. They had the tsaros of a famine. There was no food in Canaan. They had a ruler in Mitzrayim that didn't listen to them, that caused them tzaras, that planted Binyamin, planted a goblin in Binyamin's knapsack. They had a lot of tzaras. But maybe the root problem was that they did not see the big picture. They saw each tzara in front of them, but they couldn't see God's invisible hands behind the scenes that was really weaving the roots and the birth of the Jewish nation. All they saw was our brother is making fun of us and he annoys us and we need some food and what's this ruler doing to us? But they couldn't see behind the scenes that throughout these tzaros, behind all these tzaros, it was really Yad Hashem. And really HaKadosh Baruch Hu was orchestrating all of the events in order to bring such a bright future, in order to bring the birth of Klal Yisrael. And the tapestry of history was being woven by God and they didn't realize it because they just saw the tzaros that was in front of them. The tikkun for such a incorrect mentality is Shibud Mitzrayim. Shibud Mitzrayim was terrible. It's terrible. Babies thrown in the river alive. Terrible. Working night and day. They didn't even have Shabbos. Shabbos was taken away from them. They didn't have a rest. And it wasn't even satisfying work. They dafka told them to build buildings on quicksand. So they wouldn't even have any Sipach HaNefesh. Nothing. No satisfaction at all. It's terrible. But when we look back at Shibud Mitzrayim, we know that we needed that to become the nation that we are. To become the nation that could survive throughout all the terrible tragedies that we've had throughout our history. We had to be born through Shibud Mitzrayim. The Ksav HaKabbalah of Mecklenburg from the 1800s in Source 15 says, the ultimate purpose why God put us in Egypt, litzarfam, was to purify us, kizav, like gold, bikur, she aspired to us, again, all the dross, all the garbage from the gold falls away, and we're left with purity. That's what happened in Mitzrayim. On a spiritual level, God had to cleanse us. So Mitzrayim represented tsaros, but God's invisible hands really running the scenes. And that's exactly what the brothers have to be taught, how this must be seen, the lesson that the brothers had to learn. I thought of this week, that's why it's not in the Makaros. Maybe there's another idea that also is explained with this, and then we'll finish up Maror. There's a discussion in the Gemara. Whenever there are two Adars, some years there are two Adars, not this year, which Adar should get Purim? Which Adar should get Purim? So there's a Machlokas. One opinion says the first one. Why would you do it the first one? Why would you think you would do it the first one? There's a concept. You get a chance to do a mitzvah, don't delay it. There's a reason why the mitzvahs. Ain't machmitzin on the mitzvah. There was one mandamer that says Purim's in the first month. But the other mandamer says, no, we want to be masmich geula le geula. We want to put together the geula of Purim and the geula of Pesach. We don't want them to be separated, so we put them within a month of each other. So that's what we paskin. Purim is in the second month, second Adar. That's what we hold. Why is it so important to have Purim and Pesach near each other? Why do we need the geula of Purim to be right next to the geula of Pesach? There are two geulas. Have a month in between. Much better for all the shalach manas leftovers. Give us another month. You know, I have the geula of Purim and Pesach. What do you mean, what's the message of having them together? So maybe one could suggest, based on our idea, there's a major difference between Purim and Pesach. Purim was the hand of God in nature. It was Nes Nistar. God's name is not mentioned in the Megillah. Not there. But we know he's behind the scenes. Mitzrayim was just the opposite. It was Nes Nigla. Ten Makos, Kriyas Yamsuf, Nisim Gluyim. Unbelievable. We have to see them in the context of each other. So we realize that everything, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind. Whether it's a Nes Nigla, whether it's a Nes Nistar, whatever it is, Teva Nes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind the scenes. It's important for us to have Purim and Pesach in the context of each other so that we appreciate each one and realize that Yad Hashem is behind it. That's the importance of having Purim next to Pesach. So when we think about our Maror, getting back to Maror, maybe Maror itself also is not one-dimensional. It's not just about the bitterness and about the Shibud. But we realize that Tsaris of the Maror, we don't do, that's the Iker. The Iker of Maror is the Tsaris. So we don't do a Seva. But maybe there's also a message behind the Maror. And that is, we realize that Yad Hashem is really behind all Tsaris and behind everything that happens in life, and we take some Nechama in that. Maror. Matzah and Maror. Third mitzvah. Third out of four. Dalet Kosos. Four cups of wine. A question that is asked by many of the commentaries. Why four? We know there's many symbolisms to the four. For Lashonos of Geula, for times it says the word kos in the story of the Sar HaMashkim. You know, various interpretations given for the number four. But when else do we ever have another mitzvah, Nidra Rabbanan, that we have to do more than once? What does he have? Netilas Yadayim, you do once. Megillah, you read once. The Iker reading is the daytime. The nighttime, okay, it was added on. The nighttime also. Even Chanukah, it's only one, it's one candle, really. That's the Iker mitzvah, one a day. But the Nes continues, you need one a day. But what do we have four cups of wine? What do you need Dalet Kosos for? So again, the most famous interpretation, as I just alluded to before, is that it's connected the four languages, the four Lashonos of Geula. In Source 16, the Psukim at the beginning of Va'era, V'hotzeisi Eschem mitachas ilos Mitzrayim, I took you out, says Hashem, V'hitzalti Eschem, V'ga'alti Eschem, V'lakachti. V'hotzeisi, V'hitzalti, V'ga'alti, V'lakachti. Those are known as the four Lashonos of Geula, and that's why we have Dalet Kosos. Says the Netziv. So why do we have four Lashonos of Geula then? So the four cups because of the four languages. So say once, you took us out. What do we need four lashonos of redemption for? Says the Netziv. There's no repetition here. The four lashonos of Geula are really a process. It's four stages of Geula. And again, as I mentioned at the beginning of this year, any part of this year can be said over basically at any point in the Seder. So it's why it's a certain valuable thought. The Dalet Kosos, they run throughout. So whenever there's a free moment, you know, get it in there, shove it in there. I'm here, I'm sitting, let me say my piece. You know, it has to do with Dalet Kosos, it has to do with Maror. You know, it's all, whatever you want to say, right here. Shibin Mitzrayim, Mechiras Yosef, it fits in anywhere. So the Dalet Lashonos of Geula. Says the Netziv, four stages, not four words which are repetitive, four stages of the Geula. Stage one, says the Nitziv. Also, just he also asks another question that he's going to answer with this pshat. That's a question of one of the Rishonim, the Mordechai. Why wine? So you get four Lashonas of Geula, you get four something. Why not four steaks? Why not four challahs? Four masses? No, four wine. Why wine? What does wine have to do with the Geulas? Another question we're going to answer. Says the Nitziv, there are really four stages of the Geula. What's the first phrase? V'hotzeisi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim. Again, this is all in Source 17. I'm just going to say it outside to save time, but feel free to read it. Says the Nitziv. Actually, just before we even analyze each four. It's impossible to think that the Jews came out in one step, in one stage. A people that were on the 49th level of Tumah, coming out and receiving the Torah, Kriyas Yamsuf, seeing the revelation of God at Kriyas Yamsuf, it's impossible that it happened in one step. It had to be stages, says the Nitziv. So what were those stages? Stage one, what's the first phrase? V'hotzeisi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim. I take you out from under the burden of Egypt. Burden means physical bondage, physical hard work. The first stage, and the Nitziv said this already stopped after the fifth Makkah. Ready after the fifth Makkah? We didn't have to work anymore. The physical bondage that the Egyptian has over us, that stopped after Arov, I think he says. Right after the fifth Makkah. That's mitachas sivlos. I took you out from there. But then we were still in Mitzrayim. We were still avadim. We just didn't have to work. We were still avadim. Then comes stage two. V'hitzalti eschem me'avodasam. I took away your status of slaves. You weren't slaves anymore in Mitzrayim. Not only did you not physically have to work, but you weren't slaves anymore. But you were physically still in the land. That hadn't changed yet. Third stage, v'ga'alti eschem bizroa netuya. I took you out with an outstretched hand. What's an outstretched hand? That's the makas. That's makas b'choros. That's stage three. I physically took you out of the land of Egypt. V'ga'alti eschem bizroa netuya. And finally, v'lakati eschem li'la'am. I took you for my nation, matan Torah. You became avdei Hashem. Final stage of the geula. Says the Nitziv. There are four stages. When we drink the kosos, as we drink each kos, what we should be thinking about is that not we were redeemed, but we're makir that Hashem did so much for us. Each stage, each one, is a tremendous hakaras hatov that we must have. The physical bondage first, being called slaves, the status. Number three, physically getting out of the land. And number four, getting the Torah. Four stages of Geula. Again, just to mention, beautiful thought I've mentioned in the past, but it's one of my favorite ones on the Haggadah, so it's a great one to have in your back pocket. The halacha is that you're not allowed to have a... This is not in your Makoros. Actually, it is. Actually, I forgot last time that it was. It is in the Makoros. So we're going to see it in a minute. But there is a halacha. Between the first and the second cup of wine, are you allowed to drink anything you want? Let's see, you're thirsty, you're talking, saying Magid for like 2 hours. Are you allowed to drink anything before the first two kosos? The answer is, yes. If you get thirsty, you can have some apple juice, have some. You can even have more wine, but the post can say it's better not to because it might not last till the end of the Seder. But again, you're allowed to drink in between the first two cups. What about between the second and the third? You're allowed to drink there? Between the second and the third cup? That's the meal. Of course you're allowed to drink there. That's the meal between the second and the third cup. The third cup is benching. Between the third and the fourth cup, not allowed to drink. Third cup is benching. After that, nafikomen's the taste in your mouth, nothing else. Not allowed to drink after the third, between the third and the fourth cup. What's the symbolism of that? You could drink between the first and the second and the third, but you can't drink between the third and the fourth. So he didn't connect it. The Nitziv discusses this. He doesn't connect it to the following, but I think it works beautifully together. The Me'ashiloach, the Ishbitzer, in Source 20, discusses the minhag that many of us have of eating an egg the night of the Seder. And you eat an egg right before they start the meal, whatever the minhag is. We eat an egg. Why do we eat an egg? Night of the Seder. What does an egg have to do with the Seder? So the Ramah, so the current Pesach egg is on the Ka'ara, that's on the Seder plate. This is a different egg. So the Ramah quotes, the Ramah says that the egg is a symbol of Avelus. Avelus, kind of Avelus, it's Pesach. There's no Avelus on Yontif. Because the Ramah, the Mefarshim explained the Ramah, the night of the Seder is always the same night of the week that Tisha B'Av falls out that year. There's a mnemonic in Hebrew known as Atbash. The Aleph connects to the Taf, the Beis connects to the Shin, going backwards. Beginning of the Aleph, Beis, and the Zeh. And the Gimel connects to the Reish, and the Dal connects to the Kuf. At, Bash, Gar, Dak. The first night of Pesach, Aleph, is always the same night of the week as Tisha B'Av, Taf. The second night of Pesach, Beis, is always the same night of the week as Shavuos, Shin. Gimel, the third night of Pesach, is always the same night of the week as Reish, Rosh Hashanah. And it continues. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, At, Bash. The Ramah says we eat an egg on the first night of Pesach to remember that we still don't have a Beis HaMikdash. And the same night of the week that we're celebrating Seder, we're going to be sitting on the floor unless we shape up. Egg symbolizes Avelus. Life goes around. The first meal that an Avel eats after coming back from the cemetery is bread and an egg. On Tisha B'Av, we eat an egg. Why? Because an egg symbolizes the cycle of life. That's one pshat while we eat an egg. But the Me'ah Shiloach, the Ishvitzer, has another pshat. That's what you have in source 20. And that is, generally, by most beings in life, there's one stage of birth. Baby's born, mazel tov, baby comes out. In egg, there are two stages. First the egg is laid, and then the egg is hatched. The chick hatches. Two stages. An egg symbolizes two stages of birth. At the end of Magid, when we just spent 2 hours discussing Yitzias Mitzrayim, what happened the night of Pesach, we eat an egg to make sure that we remember that this was only stage one. And only 49 days from now, we're going to have the real birth of our nation on Shavuos at Kabbalah Sator. An egg. Two stages. Stage one is Yitzias Mitzrayim. Stage two is Kabbalah Sator. That's why, says the Netziv, you're not allowed to drink between the third and the fourth cup. The third cup, what did we say, symbolizes physically leaving Egypt? The fourth cup is Kabbalah Satorah. You can't have a break between the two. You want to have a break between the first and the second, and the second and the third, that's fine. There's no, you're not allowed to drink anything between the third and the fourth cup. You can't have a hefsek. You can't have a break between the third and the fourth cup, because you can't have a break between Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kabbalah Satorah. Lest one think that just leaving Egypt is the end of it all, we don't say that. The last two stages of the Geula have to be connected, and there's no drinking in between. That's why we eat the egg. So that's Dalet Kosos. Dalet Kosos, four stages of the Geula. Finally, let us discuss the fourth mitzvah salayla that we'll get into, and that is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. We discussed Matzah, Maror, Dalet Kosos, and now Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Magid is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, discussing the story. If you look at the end of Magid, though, right before the end of Magid, right before the bracha, what's the last thing we say? The last thing we say, the last paragraphs we say at the end of Magid is the beginning of Hallel. Beginning of Hallel, we say the first two paragraphs of Hallel at the end of Magid. And the Sefer HaChinuch says in Source 22 that Hallel is part of the mitzvah. Praising Hashem is part of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Couple of questions about the Hallel that we say Pesach night. Seems to be somewhat unusual. The halacha usually is that you have to stand for Hallel. And yet we sit. Why are we allowed to sit for Hallel? Question two. You're not allowed to break up Hallel the rest of the year. You got to say Hallel. You say all or nothing. You're not going to have time for Hallel. So you can't say the beginning. What do we do here? We say the first two paragraphs and then we have a meal. And then you finish it later. How are we allowed to break up the Hallel? And finally, a third question. Where's the bracha on the Hallel? We always make a bracha on Hallel. Where's the bracha on this Hallel? So some say we made a bracha in Shul. When we said Hallel in Shul, we made a bracha there. First of all, not everybody says a bracha. It says Hallel in Shul. And even if we did, that was a while ago. So where's the bracha? says Rav Haigon, one of the Gaonim quoted in the Ran in source 23, a line that we have to explain. Why don't we say Hallel on, why don't we say a bracha on the Hallel? Rav Haigon, Kasa B'tshuva, She'im Avarchan al Hallel B'lele B'sachim, Ligmar as a Hallel, why? She'ein anu Korin oso B'toras Korin, Ela B'toras Omer Shira. First what he says, and then we'll explain it. The Hallel is not a mitzvah of kriya, of reading, but a mitzvah of shira, singing. What does that mean? Rav Soloveitchik explains that throughout the year, we have many times a mitzvah to read Hallel. Every yontif there's a mitzvah to read Hallel. Kedushas Hayom, whether it's a din d'oraisa, a din d'rabbanan, we are commanded to say Hallel. When you're commanded to say Hallel, when there's a mitzvah of kriya, of reading Hallel, then it has certain rules and regulations. This is a mitzvah that is formatted, that has to be structured. You can't break it. You must stand. You say a brach on it. Asher kedushanu b'mitzvosav. That's Hallel throughout the year. The Hallel of the end of the Magid is a very different kind of Hallel. That's a Hallel that after spending 2 hours discussing the story and hopefully appreciating what God has done for us and feeling exhilarated that we're free and that we could be Avdei Hashem and that we have meaning in life and we have tachlis in life. By the time we get to the end of Magid, we're supposed to burst forth in song. We're supposed to overflow in praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't have a mitzvah to say Hallel. No, it just comes out of us. We can't stop ourselves. So this Hallel could be a rule breaker. This isn't a regular, you have a mitzvah to say Hallel, so say Hallel. If we make a bracha on this Hallel, right, through Soloveitchik, that would be undermining the whole purpose of this Hallel. You'd be formalizing it. You'll be saying, oh, you have to say the Hallel. No, we don't want to have to say the Hallel. We want to naturally, spontaneously overflow in joy to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, based on everything that we've done at the whole Seder. And that's what he says in source 24, quoted in the Sefer Reishis Kochi, all other Hallels are about a past event. So there's a mitzvah to commemorate it with Hallel. But when it comes to the Seder that we're reliving, Ki'ilu hu yatsam Mitzrayim, we went out of Mitzrayim. We are having that feeling. So this is a, what he calls, tkuvah spontaneous, tivis, l'nation et chadish alav. We scream out praise of Hashem. It's not a formal recital. It's a rule breaker. It's a natural, spontaneous overflowing of praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is really the goal of what we yearn to get to that feeling at the end of the Seder. So as we think about the mitzvahs that we discussed, and we realize that the more we prepare for the Seder, and the more we think about the messages of the Seder, the better prepared and equipped we'll be to get to that feeling. We realize that matzah has 2 themes. Matzah symbolizes the shibud and symbolizes the chayrus, the bondage and the freedom. Even maror symbolizes the shibud, and yet also maror symbolizes the hidden Yad Hashem. And that's what the brothers had to learn by going down to Mitzrayim. We know that the Dalet Kosos really is a process of geula that started off physical bondage, just slaves, out of Mitzrayim, and getting the Torah. And we're not allowed to have a hefsek between the last two, because we realize what the egg tells us, and that is that the final stage was the ultimate when it came to Shavuos. If we could hopefully inculcate and think about these ideas, hopefully we'll get to the final point. The Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim, where there's a natural Hallel, a spontaneous Hallel of the Hodah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and a real feeling of Ki'ilu Anachnu Yatzasrayim Adam Mitzrayim. Hashem, tonight is the Chodesh HaGeula. Tonight starts the Chodesh HaGeula for Tavshin Samach Zayin. So Bez Hashem, as Chazal say, B'nisa Nigal U'B'nisan Asidin Lehigar. Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Let me be the first to wish you that.